Good morning, everyone. So Lyme disease was first described, and pardon, this has been covered a little bit with the last presentation. Lyme disease was first described in the U.S. in 1977 following an outbreak of juvenile arthritis in Lyme, Connecticut. Lyme disease is caused by Borrelia burgdorferi, a spirochete bacteria, and is transmitted by the bite of an exoted tick. The picture on the right is an electron micrograph of the bacteria. Lyme disease became nationally notifiable in 1991, and the current surveillance case definition includes clinical and laboratory criteria similar to many conditions, but also exposure and endemicity criteria to make the case classification. So you've seen this map already. Lyme disease is the most common tick-borne illness in the U.S., with greater than 36,000 cases reported in 2013. Tennessee, indicated by the bold border, is a low-incidence state, reporting only 25 cases during that year. Big data has become a buzzword that often comes with a promise to revolutionize almost everything. Business, healthcare, and yes, even public health. The healthcare industry generates large amounts of data from all aspects of care, from electronic medical records to laboratory and pharmacy data to insurance claims data. A concerted effort is needed to differentiate the true potential from promises as it applies to public health surveillance. When a recent study using administrative claims data estimated that more than 200 cases of Lyme disease occurred in Tennessee, rather than the 30 cases that TDH reports, we took the opportunity to validate the data and ascertain additional Lyme disease cases. So the prior study, which was conducted by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee, hereafter referred to as Blue Cross, estimated the incidence rate of Lyme disease was eightfold higher using their administrative claims data in the blue dashed line compared to cases reported to TDH in the solid black line. However, there was no review of medical records to validate those diagnoses. So our objectives were to validate the Lyme disease diagnoses in the administrative claims data because the accuracy of claims data can vary by condition. And we also evaluated medical records to validate those, evaluated administrative claims data for use in Lyme disease surveillance in Tennessee. So our methods were to identify, to identify Lyme disease cases in Tennessee. We examined our data from January 2011 through June 2013, which represents a period when the national surveillance case definition was stable. Only residents of Tennessee insured by Blue Cross were included in our study. We received administrative claims data from Blue Cross, the single largest healthcare insurance provider in Tennessee, covering approximately 50% of the population. We used the same Blue Cross algorithm applied to the claims data from the previous study, which required that at least three primary or secondary ICD-9 codes for Lyme disease. Those with an ICD-9 code of Lyme disease prior to January 2011 in the Blue Cross data were excluded. In comparison, cases reported to TDH met the 2011 national surveillance case definition as either confirmed or probable cases. The national surveillance case definition, or CSDE case definition, for Lyme disease includes the clinical criteria of either erythema migrans rash or late manifestations of disease such as arthritic, cardiac, or neurologic abnormalities. The laboratory criteria consist of two-tiered serologic testing with enzyme immunoassay or immunofluorescence assay followed by Western blot. Unique to the Lyme disease are the exposure and endemicity components that are met if a person has possible exposure to infected ticks within 30 days before rash onset. A case classification as probable is given for a person with physician-diagnosed disease meeting laboratory criteria. Confirmed cases are among people with rash and either positive laboratory criteria or possible exposure, or a person with late manifestation of disease and positive laboratory criteria. And this is just a very brief summary. There's definitely a lot more to this case definition. I could have spent 5 slides just talking about all of this. So the matches were identified if the person was found in both the TDH and the Blue Cross data. And we requested the medical records of a simple random sample of those that were unmatched in that Blue Cross data. And we used the 2011 National Surveillance Case Definition, applied the 2011 National Surveillance Case Definition. So how did the two data sets compare? 74 cases were identified in TDH database, and 311 persons with Lyme disease were diagnosed according to the Blue Cross data. Matching individuals, we identified only 5 individuals in both data sets, leaving 66 cases in the TDH database alone and 386 persons diagnosed in the Lyme disease with Lyme disease in the Blue Cross data alone. Of 386 unmatched persons in the Blue Cross data, 123 were randomly selected for medical record review. From 123 medical records reviewed, 17 were not available and 106 were received. Using the National Surveillance Case Definition, only 4 individuals were identified, 2 as confirmed and 2 as probable. 102 sampled cases did not meet the National Surveillance Case Definition. So calculating the predictive value positive of Lyme disease in our sample, we identified 4 cases from 106 examined for a predictive value positive of 4%. Now, let's look at why the persons not meeting the National Surveillance Case Definition, or let's look at those not meeting the National Surveillance Case Definition. Of the 102 that did not meet the case definition, 22 were subsequently ruled out with additional laboratory testing after the visit in which the diagnosis was coded. 53 had a prior Lyme disease diagnosis noted in the medical record. Examples include late manifestation of Lyme disease, the diagnosis code persisting in the chart, or management of chronic Lyme disease, a diagnosis not recognized by the Infectious Diseases Society of America. It is important to note that 8 of the 53 had been reported to TDH in the past, in one case over a decade earlier. 27 lacked sufficient evidence to make a classification. Several examples include no clear onset of symptoms despite supporting laboratory evidence, no supporting laboratory evidence, or having laboratory evidence only. In summary, the Blue Cross administrative claims data enabled us to identify additional cases of Lyme disease. The predictive value positive of persons with diagnosed with a diagnosis in the administrative claims data was low, and a person examining a study examining the predictive value positive of ICD-9 codes for nationally notifiable diseases in North Carolina reported to states using commercial laboratory tests. A study examining the predictive value positive of ICD-9 codes for nationally notifiable diseases in North Carolina found a similar predictive value positive of 6% for Lyme disease. The number of newly identified cases was far fewer than expected. A recent CDC study in 4 states with a high incidence of Lyme disease showed a tenfold greater number of persons infected than are reported to states using commercial laboratory testing. And this data required reviewing many medical records to identify just a few cases, consuming considerable staff time on both the part of TDH and Blue Cross. So several of our limitations. We had only a limited cross-section of each patient's medical record, spanning 3 office visits. This potentially resulted in some misclassification of the outcome and may have decreased the number that we were able to identify. Despite our best efforts to exclude individuals with prior diagnoses of Lyme disease, half of those not meeting the National Surveillance Case Definition were old diagnoses. Administrative claims data are designed to process payments, and assumptions must be made when they're used for surveillance purposes. Our findings may not be generalizable to other states. Tennessee is a low incidence state, averaging only 30 cases per year, and findings in high incidence states may differ. In conclusion, we found that administrative claims data could be used to identify previously unreported cases of Lyme disease, but with poor predictive value. Conducting case finding activities routinely is not sustainable for supplementing traditional case-based reporting given the substantial resources required. And finally, the feasibility of administrative claims data might differ by jurisdiction and the disease being evaluated. I'd like to thank the following people for their assistance with this investigation. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Hi, Catherine Feldman, Maryland, high incidence state. Question, you say the Blue Cross data set you searched Lyme disease, if records had more than three Lyme disease codes, there's a single ICD-9 code for Lyme disease. So what else were you looking for?
So it would be something like their symptoms were coded as Lyme, as being associated with Lyme disease, a laboratory test being coded as Lyme disease. So we were hoping to have to narrow down the cases that really, you know, were not kind of eliminate some of the chaff, I guess is the best way to describe it, and look at those who might have the greatest likelihood of being true cases of Lyme disease.
Okay, thanks. We went back to our 2009 data and looked at across the spectrum of case classifications, confirmed probable suspect and those that were ultimately ruled out, and did a similar thing where we went to the providers and actually asked for the billing codes that were used for those visits, and there were some challenges with that. It didn't always match up date-wise, so we're not sure we got full representation, but we found a fairly poor sensitivity and specificity using just the line code, 088.81, and a slightly better positive predictive value, but we're a higher prevalent state. So yeah, it's a challenge. It's not super useful. Or we don't think it's super useful, unfortunately. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, you have to identify that you're dealing with infection and how many people are going to see their clinician, and then how many people are going to be diagnosed correctly, and how many of those diagnoses are going to make it into the billing database. And so you have substantial issues kind of each way along that path.
Thank you so much for doing this. This is Thomas from Dallas, Mississippi. We have a huge problem in Mississippi, low incidence, with people doing these fishing expeditions looking for explaining these chronic non-specific symptoms, and they hit these Lyme EIAs. Were a lot of these people fishing expeditions from out of Udonis? Did many of them have a characteristic rash, and did most of them have just a screening EIA? So that's a lot of questions, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So in short, I mean, I truly think that it was kind of a fishing expedition. I mean, we had a lot of folks who had just a simple EIA positive, no Western blot follow-up, and, you know, it was coded by the clinician as being Lyme disease. We also found where if somebody was going into their clinician, it may have been their first time they were doing a history, and it got down in the medical record as the patient was reported with Lyme disease or diagnosed with Lyme disease in the past, and somehow that got translated to Lyme disease for that office visit. A lot of different things there.
The rash.
The rash was actually not a major clinical characteristic that we found. Interestingly enough, so the two confirmed and two probable cases. One of the confirmed cases was identified in a student who was going to school in a New England state and had returned home and was diagnosed over school break. And so we met the confirmed case definition. The other was with the way that the endemic counties work, it was a county that we have not identified infected exoded ticks in the past. So it was one where we had two confirmed cases, and I don't know the history of that in the recent past. And so that person, you know, had clinical criteria, you know, clinician thought it was, and because they were living in a kind of quote-unquote endemic county, they were one of our confirmed cases. So if you kind of exclude all of that, I mean, we really would have identified, you know, three probable cases, and, you know, the truth of those is kind of left up in the air.
Yeah, by Florida Department of Health, low endemic state. Comment and a question. I think this kind of work is really interesting and very important to publish, and I encourage everyone who does this sort of work, because we have a lot of external groups who have an interest in taking on these types of research projects on their own, university graduate students and others diving into these administrative that's not understanding the limitations of them, and then we get papers and public health to have to then explain why they're not meet our standards, which is challenging. You see that in cancers a lot. The question I had was about treatment. So these, the two groups, the ones that eventually were re-evaluated and not diagnosed as Lyme were those who never were, where the diagnosis was not established. Did they get treated for Lyme?
Many of them were treated for Lyme. I can't remember the percentage, but I think it was around 40% were actually being actively treated. Definitely.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania. That was my question about treatment, actually. I also wanted to ask you and then Marilyn, since you did a similar sort of comparison, have you done any outreach to your physicians or what? Are you planning any outreach or anything like that to educate them on who needs to be treated for Lyme?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, at this point, we're not moving forward with any sort of educational campaign for clinicians.
It's not as big of an issue for you, but I,
yeah.
You know, Maryland, Pennsylvania, this is a huge issue for us, of course. So.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, do you have any
comments? So we're not going to... necessarily be talking to the providers about billing. There's so much that goes into billing. I think that we have to remember that there's a lot that drives the billing codes that are used, and so those practices are not going to change just because public health is saying, wait a minute, that's not the best way to go. So we certainly always are trying to educate our providers. I think Karina's point about making sure these results get out there, because I think more and more people are using these alternative data sets and trying to describe disease incidents and things based on them. So I think the more systematic approaches we can take to characterize them to understand the limitations is important. So yes, on provider education, on this specific thing, no imminent plans.
Well, thank you very much, Josh, and thank you everyone for a robust discussion.